Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. The section that we're reading through has 69 pages, and we have quite some distance to go. Just as a refresher, this section is from Bhagavat Sandarbha, specifically this Bhagavat Sandarbha section. Anuchet is expanding on the meaning of the second of Gajendra's prayers, 833. 831 is saying these are the prayers that King Indradumna recited in his previous life. Prabhupada describes in the purport mantra upasana that we should also in this life, as devotees, in addition to chanting Hare Krishna, have some standard prayers that we recite, because who knows what your next life will be. By some accident, the great king became an elephant, but in circumstance, Super Soul reminded him of his prayers. So that's what these prayers are, Gajendra's prayers from his previous life as a king. And the second prayer, which is text 3, of Canto 8, Chapter 3, is the verse that we're reviewing, or Jiva Goswami is reviewing, and it has, the reason we're reviewing that one is because it has several similar elements to Canto 10, Chapter 37, Text 22. And that is the nature of the personality of Godhead, his all spiritual form, all spiritual qualities, all spiritual name, completely different from those of the material world, activities, qualities, name in the material world. This is chapter 37, text 22 is Narada speaking to Krishna, encouraging him to go to Mathura and do the rest of his pastimes. In the beginning, there's glorification, and then there's again glorification. And this is a glorification verse, the position of Krishna as all spiritual. So at the end of this anuchet, we're going to finish it today, and then move on to something else within Jiva Goswami's writings, Bhagavat Sandarbha again. But then just heads up, I mean, after establishing the all-spiritual nature of Krishna's form, etc., etc., he goes to the next topic, is how to understand this term nirguna, because it's in the Vedas. Nirguna, he has no qualities. And, you know, the Mayavadis take it a certain way. We heard that Shankaracharya Swami reciting a different version than a Vaishnava version. But how to understand nirguna? That's in the next section of Bhagavad Sandarbha. We're not going there. But it's a natural flow. You show, here's a bucket that doesn't have holes, and over there is a bucket that has holes. You can do it in reverse order. This bucket has holes. Let's take a look at one that doesn't have holes. So here's the BBT translation of 8.3.3. This is Gajendra's second prayer. The Supreme Godhead is the supreme platform on which everything rests, the ingredient by which everything has been produced, and the person who has created and is the only cause of the cosmic manifestation. Nonetheless, he is different from the cause and the result. Sounds contradictory, right? I surrender unto him the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is self-sufficient in everything. We've been hearing in the last few days this self-sufficient term. In the verse 8.3.3, the Sanskrit is Swayam Bhuvam. So like Swayambhu. Who is that a name of? Swayambhu. Lord Brahma. Swayambhu. Lord Brahma. So he's the source of Brahma. Because, so he's the origin of Brahma, who's the creator. So Brahma is the creator, but Brahma is the non-creator. Krishna creates Brahma, but he's the doer, but the non-doer. These contradictions and all that stuff, we discussed that a number of times. The word I was looking for is harmonizer. He's the harmonizer of all contradictions. But there's, right in the text, there's some contradictions, and he, Jiva Goswami, has been pulling it apart and putting it back together again. With scriptural reference and powerful logic proving the Lord's form is all spiritual, his qualities are all spiritual, his name is all spiritual, different than material names and so forth. So this section that we just ended, the very next sentence, Bhagavan's purpose is bliss. So we were hearing there's this and that things going on when he does pastime, but the main is he's experiencing bliss and he's giving bliss to others. And by that, the residents of Vrindavan are protected. And now, as far as Canto 10, Chapter 37, go do the same with others because they're feeling fear instead of bliss. So give them protection. So that the secondary is kill Kamsa, but the primary is give them bliss. Reciprocate with their love for you, which he does. Then Jiva Goswami writes, let us return to the subject. And the subject is the Lord's qualities, being all spiritual, are exceptional, astonishing enough to attract the Atmaramas. And you know the Atmarama verse. If you can know it, you can say it with me. Atmaramas chamunayo, dear granta api arukrame, kurvanti ahaitukim bhaktim, ittam bhuta guno harihi. That's 1, 7, 10. That's the Atmarama verse, celebrated verse. And then the next verse is 11. So we'll read the translation. Some sages who are Atmaramas beyond the scriptures, false ego and rules, also practice unmotivated pure bhakti to the master of pure bhakti, Krishna, since he possesses qualities attractive even to them. Shukadeva, the son of Vyas, whose mind became distracted from trance by the qualities of Krishna, and who became attracted to the Vaishnava, studied this great Bhagavatam. The next text, this is an answer to the question, wait a minute. Vyas taught this to his son, but his son was already Brahman realized. So what do you have to go study something for? He's already there. When you're there, you don't need to study something. So why did he study something? Here's the answer. It's beyond Brahman. The qualities of Krishna are transcendental. It's checkmate. It's proof. Then Jiva Goswami makes another reference to Vishnu Dharmotara, another scripture translation. By his power, the Lord is endowed with all good qualities and devoid of all faults. Fools say the Lord has good and bad qualities out of bewilderment. There is no Maya or anything made of Maya in the Lord. Thus, there is no Maya in things related to the Lord. The world is not created by Maya. It arises by the power of the Lord, which is what we've heard, right? It's the instrument, but behind the instrument is the person wielding the instrument. Supposing I want to shake hands, but you're some distance away, so I could put a stick and a glove at the end of the stick, and we can shake hands. So it's shaking hands and not shaking hands. The hand is over here, and the glove is over there. Through his instrument, through his agents, Krishna does things. But he doesn't do things. That's what we're going to hear expanded coming up. Because the Lord is beyond Maya, he is called supreme by the wise. This completes the explanation of Srimad Bhagavatam 8.3.3. Thus it is proved that the qualities and name of the Lord are completely different from those of the material world. Next, question. Accepting that the name, form, and qualities arise from your swarup, since your swarup is perfect in itself, what's the purpose of your having these? A name, qualities, a form. So now he goes ahead to 8.3.8, another prayer by Gajendra. Loka pyaya sampavaya. This is going to appear again. You'll hear it again. Loka pyaya sampavaya. Translation. He accepts them, these things, for destruction and attainment. Then there's two meanings of destruction and attainment. We heard this yesterday. It's fine and it's perfectly natural to have different meanings for the same thing. So destruction, we normally think of destruction and creation as, you know, something that's from the Lord. It seems to be that's what this 8.3.3 is saying. Or there's the spiritual aspect that's animating the material aspect. Illusion is animated by the Swarup Shakti. We heard this repeatedly. They're like, okay, I got it. Matter doesn't move without the touch of spirit. Illusion doesn't happen without the empowerment of Krishna to have illusion bewilder people. Accepting what is not to be what is and being attached to it for that matter. That's empowered by, made possible by the spiritual potencies of Krishna. And this other is a reflection of that spiritual potency. So there's a spiritual conception of destruction. Here we go. Krishna accepts the forms for destroying samsara for the devotees. That's a different kind of destruction. Like absolute liberation. And attainment of happiness, of bhakti for them. That's this, you know, Bhagavan is all about bliss. And he does other things, but those are secondary things. There's primary things. He gives bliss to his devotees. And he annihilates their samsara and the causes of samsara. So back to this loka pyaya sambhavaya. Sambhavaya means for attaining. It also means to give special happiness, a bhakti, to the nitya siddhas who have already attained him. Krishna's appearance is to attract us, to free us from bondage. And for those who are already nitya siddha personalities, it's to stimulate their happiness in another way, attaining a higher and higher and ever-increasing happiness by his presence. That's why he assumes these forms. That's the question. Arjuna says, Canto 1, Chapter 7, Text 25, this is Chapter 7, 25, you appear in this world in this way, in your spiritual form, with a desire to relieve the burden of the earth and to give continuous happiness to your dedicated devotees for letting them worship you, by letting them worship you. The meaning is this. Just as with the other avatars, the Purusha avatars, so this avatar, your manifestation as Krishna, Swayam Bhagavan, appeared in order to relieve the burden of the highest bhakti, and to give happiness of worshipping you constantly, anudhyanaya, to other devotees. Question. You say that the goal of having forms is to give happiness and bhakti to devotees. Since you are full of bliss, why would you think of their happiness? You're Atmarama. So like, what, you don't need something. Why are you thinking about them? Really nice answer. The Lord who knows everything is without fault. He would have the fault of lack of compassion in ignoring the devotees who depend only on him. Ananya bhavanam. Compassion appears even in Atmaramas. If I was in a courtroom, I'd really like Jiva Goswami as my lawyer. He's got an answer for everything. Question. No, excuse me. This is a reference to Kurma Purana saying the same. Still, the fault of birth and transformation, you know, like he goes through different stages of life and so forth. The word in Sanskrit is vikara. So we undergo transformation, everything. You know, the seasons and bodies and emotions, and there's continual transformation in this material plane. Still, the fault of birth and transformation can never be found in the Supreme Lord, but contrary qualities are found together in the Lord. This harmonizer of contradictions. Contrary qualities are found together in the Lord. Kurma Purana. Thus, it is possible for the Lord, who has a variety of qualities, the Shrutis glorify with wonder a portion of this quality spread everywhere in things related to him. So Krishna is present everywhere. But how is he present everywhere? A portion of his transcendental quality is present everywhere, even within the material world. That's vibhutis, right? Vibhutis? Vibhuti Yoga? Chapter 10. And even aside from, you know, of mountains, I'm the Himalayas, what about a bump? You know, a small mountain. That's also Krishna. It is a portion of his opulences that are spiritual, are manifest. That's why they're there. That's why they're there. This quality attracts everyone from Brahma to the lowest entity. Now quoting Canto 10, Chapter 32. Chapter 32 is from the Rasa Dance section. This is the Gopi speaking. Those individuals who are spiritually self-satisfied, no, it's Krishna speaking. Those individuals who are spiritually self-satisfied, the Atmarama personalities, those materially satisfied, those who are ignorant, and those who intentionally offend those who act for others' welfare, do not respond, even those who love them. What to speak of those who are inimical? But the reason I do not immediately reciprocate the affection of love of living beings, even when they worship me, O gopis, is that I want to intensify their loving devotion. They then become like a poor man who has gained some wealth and then lost it, and who thus becomes so anxious about it that he can think of nothing else. Krishna's clever. He knows when to do that also, when not to do that. You know, there's a purpose. He's disclosing. The mercy of the all-powerful Lord, whose goal is happiness of the devotee, put in big letters, whose goal is happiness of the devotee. He's all powerful, but displaying his power or not displaying his power or whatever he does is happiness of the devotee. This is the Lord's astonishing, excellent nature arising from the play of the bliss of his Swarup that is shown in this 8.3.8, Anukulam Richchatiti, he eternally accepts birth. In the already quoted, and then it gives, here's the Sanskrit, Navidyate Yashacha Janma Karma Va Na Nama Rupe Gunadosha Eva Va Tatapi, and here's our Loka Pyaya Sambhavaya Ya, and here's our Swa Maya Ya. Remember we discussed that threadbare? And Swa Maya Ya can have the meaning of his illusory potency or his internal potency. And depending upon context, one can understand it this way or that way. Samayaya tani anukalam richchati, anukalam richchati, eternally accepts birth and activities. Translation 8.3.8. He who has no birth or activities, no name or form, and no qualities or faults, eternally accepts birth and activities. So there's the accepting and delivering. And now it's translated in the Bhagavatam in relation to creation. So as Brahma and Shiva at the time of creation and destruction, by his energies, Krishna's energies, of Rajas and Tamas for creating and destroying the universe. So we have two different creating and destroying ideas. And they're both from the same Supreme Lord. So he acts differently with the devotees and he acts differently with the non-devotees. And that's his prerogative. He's doing both at the same time. And depending upon the regard for him, they experience this or that. Commentary continues. One should not think that he has any other goal in doing these actions. The goal of the Lord, who is most capable, is simply bliss. So how is it bliss to create a situation where there's suffering in this world and so forth? It's to rectify the misunderstanding of the living entity that there's happiness in this place where he's forgotten. The unhappiness is ignorance. It's not the place. It's not the Lord's intention. So I just take note, I'm saying it again, this swamayaya, this whole message that we're hearing, you know, in a number of different ways from Jiva Goswami, is same as this 10.37.22, where there's two possible meanings. And the main meaning is that he, Krishna, spoken by Narada, is not touched by illusion. And those that are touched by illusion, he dispels their illusion. And the illusion is suffering. But for those that they wish to not have contact with Krishna, then they have illusion. They have, you know, this creation and destruction feature going on. Because that's what they want. This section ends. There's no reference, but he quotes a Sanskrit. There's a Sanskrit phrase, Kripalore. That's how it starts. For a person who cannot show compassion, a show of compassion causes him suffering. For a person capable of compassion, showing compassion makes him happy. That's a good one to remember, huh? But compassion is not apart from an Atmaram person or the personality of Godhead is by nature compassionate. And if you don't see compassion, then there's something wrong. Now, we may not understand the actions of a great soul who is doing something out of compassion. Like Narada, for example, Narada cursing Nalakuvera and Manigriva. His cursing wasn't anything other than compassion. To relieve them of their pride, give them Krishna's association, let them become pure devotees. Then they can return back to Kuvera's abode, which is what happened. So it didn't look nice, but it was compassion. And etc. So things may happen to a devotee. You may have some dear friends that have some difficulty. You may be one yourself that has some difficulty. And so what's your relationship with Krishna like? How are you seeing that difficulty? Or the other way, seeing good fortune. If you have a strong tendency to be the enjoyer of good fortune, then it's not kindness to give good fortune. Because you don't really understand what good fortune is. You know, those of you that are parents, supposing your child wants something that's detrimental. And you give them something that's detrimental, they think, oh, good fortune. It's not good fortune, it's not good parenting. So how to understand from a child's perspective, to understand the loving nature of parents. It has everything to do with the nature of the relationship. And the nature of our relationship with Krishna is good fortune, ill fortune is, you know, there's the material standard and there's the spiritual standard. And his appearance is out of compassion because he wants bliss. Okay, so we're moving on. Not the very next Sandarbha, but it's now this discussion is about the living entity, and by understanding properly the living entity, we can get a better understanding of the Supreme Living Entity. And here's the opening line. This is like the banner for the whole section we're going to enter next. The angsas of the Lord share the same quality. And this could, angsa can refer to the jiva, mame vangsa jiva loke. It can, angsa can refer to his expansions that are more on the Vishnu tattva category. That's also, angsa applies. So the angsas of the Lord share the same quality. Quoting Canto 10, Chapter 13, Sukadev Goswami speaking, it's towards the very end of that chapter. This is, you know, the Brahma Vimohan Leela chapter. The forms shown to Brahma, the forms all had eternal, unlimited forms, full of knowledge and bliss, which were one form. Their great glory could not even, cannot even be touched by the Atma Gyanis. Atma Gyanis, the speculators. We heard that, didn't we? Itam Satam. Satanam, itam satanam, brahmasukha. So the gyanis may get to brahmasukha, but they cannot understand the form of the Lord. So the commentary says, all the forms are described with form. They were forms of truth and knowledge. Remember that Shankaracharya fellow from the discussion yesterday. They were forms of truth and knowledge. Forms without limit. You know, the argument is if you have form, you've immediately created some limit. But the Supreme is unlimited, so form, you can't have form. But there's forms that are without limit. Forms of bliss. This is commentary on what we just heard. They, these forms seen by Brahma, were without distinction from each other, eka matra. They were always of one form, eka rasaha. They were the form of Brahman, murtayaha, with truth, knowledge, and infinity and bliss as one unit. Their glory could not be touched by those who had eyes of Atmagyan, parentheses, Upanishad Dirsham. These forms became visible. So now further explanation. The word matram, eka matram, means only, eka, only one. Matram, that word matram, only, indicates their color. We discussed color, the previous thing. The word matra only indicates their color and other attributes had the same spiritual nature as the Lord's Swarup. The word murtayaha, or forms, does not refer to pure atmas, according to Sridhar Swami and Shukadev, since it is difficult to derive that meaning by using indirect interpretation. The topic again is the angsas have the same quality as the Lord. So this whole thing about the Lord's qualities. And then there's his angsas. So his angsas, in this case, it's the features of Narayan. And he is advising, please don't make this mistake of making some indirect interpretation of what's been said. It's one form. You know, don't go into the oneness thing. It's form. Variously manifest. That's what it's stated, and don't change it around by interpretation. Next he quotes Canto 3, Chapter 15. The sages saw the Lord. surrounded by devotees carrying objects to offer him. This is the four Kumaras at the gates of Vaikuntha. The sages, four of them, saw the Lord surrounded by devotees carrying objects to offer him. He was previously the object of their meditation, but now appeared directly before their eyes. Form, that's the point. That meaning would be contrary to Shukadev's heart. That's the interpretation, this Lakshanam thing. Quoting Shukadev Goswami's heart, the conclusion of Canto 12, Chapter 12. Let me offer my respectful obeisances, this is Sutta. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the son of Vyasadev Shukadev Goswami, who destroys all sin, and who, though fixed in his own bliss with no distractions, became attracted to the pastimes of Krishna and mercifully spread the Bhagavatam, which describes Krishna and reveals the rasa of his pastimes. So it will be contradictory to Sukadeva Goswami to use this indirect interpretation thing, the oneness interpretation thing. And he is the speaker of what was seen by Brahma. Next is our verse, 10:37:22. Let me surrender to you, Bhagavan. You are the condensed form of pure knowledge and bliss. You have forms with many qualities. Your desires are always fulfilled. Because of your Swarup Shakti, you are never touched by the material gunas. So again, that's the reference to, you know, understanding, does the angsas of the Lord have similar qualities as the Lord? So another reference, this is the chapter 27, which is the prayers of Surabhi and Indra to the personality of Godhead. They come after the Govardhan Leela, chapter 27. Unto him who assumes bodies according to the desires of his devotees, unto him whose form is pure consciousness, unto him who is the universe, who is Mahavishnu and the Antaryami, I offer my obeisances. And then from Brahma's Prayers, chapter 14, therefore this entire universe, which, like a dream, is by nature unreal, nevertheless appears real. And thus, it covers one's consciousness and assails one with repeated miseries. This universe appears real because it is manifested by the potency of illusion emanating from you, whose unlimited form is full of eternal happiness and knowledge. Again, he says, these verses should not be made useless by Lakshana, that's deriving some meaning by indirect interpretations. Then comes a reference from chapter 41. This is Krishna's entering Mathura, Krishna and Balaram. And Vasudeva and Devaki are seeing him. Taking him into their hearts, through their eyes, they embraced him, the form of all bliss. And as their bodily hair stood on end, O subduer of enemies, they forgot the unlimited distress caused by his absence. Next is chapter 48. This is Kubja, simply by smelling the fragrance of Krishna's lotus feet, Trivikra cleansed away the burning desire Cupid had aroused in her breasts, chest, and eyes. With her two arms, she embraced between her breasts her lover, Krishna, the personification of bliss, and thus she gave up her long-standing distress. Commentary says, since she embraced that form, other meanings are refuted. Parentheses, the Lord could not be without form. And then our final reference, Mahavaraha Purana, quote, the bodies of the Lord are all eternal, unchanging, and devoid of faults. They are never the products of matter. They are completely filled with the highest bliss and knowledge. There is no distinction of body and soul for the Lord, Mahavaraha Purana. That's the end of this particular Anuchet, and tomorrow we'll start another one. Just as a reminder of why we're doing all this, it's to have a clear, ever increasingly clear picture with lots of support from Scripture and helping us understand how to apply the Scripture to our lives. In understanding to whom we are to be devoted and unto whom we are to fix our mind and engage our activities. Sometimes it is found amongst the devotee community. Some people just like doing service. Like all of this is not, they get fidgety and let me go do some service. And, what about persons who just want to do some service? Well, here's two answers. Doing service is fine. And while doing service, Mamanusmara, Yudhyacha, in Arjuna's case, Yudhya means fighting. In our case, Prabhupada's translation is, engage in your prescribed duty and always think of me. So how are we going to always think of Krishna? By being attached to Krishna, by hearing him. So get clarity about who is Krishna. And then it's not just some notion. God may be a notion. And when the going gets tough, you know, we start to complain about that notion didn't let us down. Or something. Or just get distracted and, you know, the busyness of life, and we're not thinking of Krishna. We're busy with, you know, solving problems. And getting things done and, you know, pressing urgent stuff that's right in front of us. We have to do it. And so we do it because we're responsible people. And that's not complete. Do those things in full remembrance of Krishna. So time invested in Mamanusmara is needed. And that's what we're doing. So, how do you fix your mind upon something you don't even know what that something is? It's notional. It's like it sounds good. But when you get right down to it, your mind doesn't stay with Krishna when you're doing stuff. What particularly problem solving or taking care of some urgent business. You know, even just be household stuff or stuff with your family or, you know, dealing with the world around you and living your life. So the purpose of doing what we're doing is to be very clear of who is that person who we're calling to give us shelter, give us protection, give us solace. We have an eternal relationship with Krishna. So who is that Krishna? And it's part of reviving our relationship with Krishna. And just to repeat something mentioned yesterday, the eagerness for being restored in that relationship is the price to pay to come to always remembering Krishna and being in pure devotion instead of something else. To come to a more mature stage, a more developed stage of bhakti, where there's still distractions and stuff going on that we attend to. But the mature stage is to do that with grace and calmness and fixed consciousness upon Krishna by the very process that we're doing. Hearing about him. Getting clarity of who he is and his loving nature. So whether it's good times or bad times, our attention is upon Krishna. Not just solve my problems, please. Or thank you very much for, you know, the good fortune you sent my way. I owe you something. I mean, that's pious. But beyond piety is bhakti. And our lives, the teaching that we've been given is to awaken bhakti. And that's eternal. It's not temporal, circumstantial. That's spiritual life. That's the opportunity. That's why we're doing what we're doing. To rekindle Krishna consciousness with some eagerness, even if we don't understand all of what we're hearing. It's fine. Let's see if there's some discussion. Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, I want to express my gratitude, Guru Maharaj. This discussion is really concentrated.
Yeah, truly really dense.
And something that is helping me is when I'm going back and reading whatever, when I'm reading my study, so it is becoming much clearer. That's what I want to express, and okay. Thank you for that.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. On this qualities of the amshas are non-different from Krishna's qualities. Just want to clarify my understanding, Guru Maharaj. We hear that Krishna has the 64 qualities in full, whereas all the other avatars, have not all of them. So
yes.
Are we talking about the similarity
yes.
of the qualities,
yes.
not the number?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. Mam Anusmara Yudhyacha you were talking about, Guru Maharaj, I was connecting to this Krishna attracting the Atmaramas. I know it may be my mind, but it's saying, okay, Atmaramas, they don't have to deal with all these things. So it's easier for them to, you know, get attracted and because
yes.
they have already seen all these lower things.
Yes.
And they identify that nothing is there.
Yes, it is easier for them.
So the question is, do I go about addressing all these so-called material, which doesn't seem to have an end? They keep coming. So how do I, you know, divide or, I don't know, do I have to, okay, put this much time to address the so-called immediate material things and this much for Krishna? You kind of spoke, I think, while doing the things, remember Krishna. So just want to hear some more on that.
Time management is certainly an aspect of bhakti. when we're doing our primary activities, our practice should be exclusively that primary activity. You don't use that as a time to do multi-processing of other things. That's distraction or worse. But so that's a practice while doing the primary things. And then when doing the secondary things, on the strength of having nicely done the primary things, that remembrance will carry on. And we may do different things. Intermittently open up Bhagavad Gita, or intermittently a prayer, or intermittently memorize a verse, or intermittently try to, purposefully try to invoke remembrance. However, what works for one individual, or at different times, the same individual, different things, resources that help. So when doing the practical things, it's not that you just throw away time management. I mean, you're going to have to cook. So when doing the cooking, carry the remembrance of Krishna with you, and then et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The secondary becomes strengthened, or begin to carry some spiritual potency, even when they're not the primary. So time management and the spiritualization of the secondary. And that's by dedicating them to Krishna's service and carrying, the purpose for those things is not just fulfilling a responsibility in the world, but it's to help carry you toward the goal. According to your nature, you have duties, all of us. Okay?
Hare Krishna. My question is, I'm just trying to connect some dots. From the Anvodi, the first characteristic it says, Rupa Goswami says it brings immediate relief from material distress. And then while reading there and in between, I think in one chapter, Rupa comments, one should not expect immediate relief from material distress as long as one is in this material world. At our stage it looks like, the material external energy is like more powerful than the internal energy. Not right. How do we understand that?
How do you understand what? Specifically, one statement don't expect, and the other statement it does it. Material distress begins to be mitigated.
Yeah, that
is that the how to understand question you're asking?
No, my question is, I was just giving that preset. My question is about, at our stage, why is it looks like the external energies are like more powerful than
because
the internal?
We're attached, we're clinging to it, and it's clinging to us. It looks more powerful. It feels it. The other is remote, and the other is proximate. It's where our consciousness is tuned into. Therefore, it has that seeming greater effect. The other is more remote, and it's less active in our consciousness and thus in our life. So it's not less powerful, but it's our disposition of heart, our affinity. Okay?
One other question. So, this is how to ask the question. When thoughts come in mind a lot of times, and we get some answers based on our understanding, still, there may be, I don't know if sometimes it is right or not right. Sometimes we get satisfied with that answer, what we get it internally. And, at what point we need to ask that question?
Which question?
I mean, the question that come to my mind, so.
At which point should you address the questions that come to your mind?
Yes.
That's your, depends what the question is. You want to get specific, or, you know, if it's just a random big spectrum of questions that come to mind, depends what the question is.
I mean, for example, this question I asked, I mean, I was trying to, think about it in the morning when I was reading. I mean, I got some understanding about because I was attached, but still I asked, should I ask that question or not to ask
okay.
that question? So.
But, you know, even if you didn't have the chance to sit here and ask the question right now, you contemplate, but, you know, be careful to look through the lens of Guru Sadhu Shastra, because otherwise you're going to come to, you know, a mistaken understanding, whatever it is. And then you have to, you know, realign that mistaken understanding with something that you hear. So make your best. It's just practice of when you contemplate through a spiritual lens. And that will help adjust the conception so it becomes a spiritual conception through which you're looking at some doubt or uncertainty or question or thought or something. The inquisitive spirit needs a medium through which to project. So if you have an opportunity to ask, and you know, I've got lots of questions. I got a lot of questions. I've been sharing, here it is again. And I'm in a dialogue with a very accomplished devotee, the person in charge of the TOVP. I have a desire to understand cosmology because it's important. I mean, if I don't understand it, it's not that I can't go back to Godhead, but it's important to get a spiritual conception of the world around us because we have a material conception. So on this topic, this is the third time now, precession, I discussed with your son. So there's this idea and then there's that idea. And then the Vedic idea doesn't conform with the material idea. So we discussed it, you know, there's different ways of looking at the same thing. Doubt. But there's observable data that says this is the right way to look at it. And so in this dialogue, an answer came back, which I'm going to research further, that says Jiva Goswami in his Tattva Sandarbha commentary, he wrote Tattva Sandarbha and he wrote a commentary to his own Tattva Sandarbha. And he says specifically, this answer came back, he says, don't trust the empiric observable data about the universe, which really makes sense because our senses are imperfect. But, you know, scientists say, based upon empiric data, such and such. And they can predict things, and so it looks like it's verifiable. And then that model doesn't conform with the Vedic model, specific to precession. So how do you talk to a scientist? How are we going to explain? And, you know, we have to place our faith in something, and we don't place our faith in observable data from these senses. We don't trash it, but that's not final because it's imperfect. So if it doesn't match, we stay with the perfect. So again, is there something that comes to mind? So it a lot depends on where your faith is. We have to have faith, otherwise we wouldn't be hearing Bhagavad Gita or ABC. How do we know that there's a soul? We hear it from authority. A child isn't born knowing, oh yeah, I'm a soul. But survey shows people believe in a soul. But what's their understanding of what a soul is? It's all over the place. So how do we really understand what a soul is? It's just like this section reading. The Yangtze has qualities like the Lord. How do we understand the qualities of the Lord? How do we understand our quality? How do we understand who we are? Covered by illusion, we're not. And how do you get illusion removed? By Swarup Shakti, by devotional service. So we have to be patient while we're being inquisitive. So your question was, how do I know when I should ask the question or not? Keep asking. And you may not have an answer. I'm sharing with you a question that I have that I'm still trying to sort out. There's a number of them. That's fine. Keep asking. Be patient. And focus on bhakti, not just the power of the intellect to sort it out. This is this and that's that and case closed. That's what we're used to. And then getting really, you know, tough about, I've got the answer. And somebody else that doesn't have this answer has got to be wrong. And this goes on. Okay.
Can I ask something off?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
So, we hear, I mean, today is Ganesh Chaturthi. We used to hear a story about the Samantaka's jewel, Krishna and all. And before that, how Krishna got into that challenge to prove himself he is not done that mistake.
Yeah.
So is there any scriptural reference to that Krishna getting affected by that, seeing the moon on that day?
No. I'm unaware of any scriptural reference about that. Okay?
There are 4 or 5 questions, Guru Maharaj, online. Uttama Bhakta Prabhu is asking, I wanted to clarify confusion in my mind. Gopis are always acting to satisfy Krishna selflessly. What does it mean when they say they're burning in the fire of physical separation? And when they meet Krishna, they feel relieved by his touch? That's the question. So they say that one side they say they feel burning in the fire of physical separation, and the other side there is, you know, they're acting selflessly to satisfy Krishna, and also are they getting relieved by his touch?
I don't see a contradiction. I mean, if there's an apparent contradiction, it's comparing our consciousness to the gopis' consciousness, which is the mistake of there is no contradiction, because their happiness is his happiness, and their feeling of separation is not selfish, it's his happiness. And his touch is his happiness. They don't have anything else going on. There's not a contradiction.
So Satyabrata Prabhu is asking, our material body is made of gross and subtle body. What's about spiritual body, which is made of Sat, Chit and Ananda, has a subtle body?
Yes. But it's not a subtle body, it's a spiritual mind. We don't separate, you know, the body and the mind from the self. It's one entity with different features. Okay.
And Sucharita Mataji is asking, while working on job-related work, after some time, it feels I didn't think of Krishna for many hours.
Mm-hmm.
So will it change as I progress in bhakti, like I remember Krishna even while doing my job?
It depends. Maybe, maybe not. Depends on how you engage yourself in the bhakti process. It can go on indefinitely like that. Or it could move. Depends on how you engage in the bhakti process. Go ahead.
And Urjaya Mataji is asking, your class is so wonderful and inspiring me to hear more. But in the midst of daily life, I tend to forget Lord Krishna many times instead of remembering always. What steps shall I take to remember you and also Lord?
Keep hearing. And give attention to the purpose of the hearing. That is to restore the relationship with Krishna. The intent, the purpose behind the activity is important. Even when hearing and what to speak of when working. Go ahead.
Tina was asking, can you discuss how Krishna intensifies our love and devotion for him? Review of the story of the man who Krishna takes from and how and when Krishna decides to do it.
Do you understand the question?
How Krishna intensifies
don't just read it again.
Love and devotion
Explain
for
it.
Him?
Do you understand the question?
Not really.
Do you understand the question?
I mean, she's referring to some review of the story of the man who Krishna takes from is not clear, but she's asking how Krishna intensify our love and devotion for him and when he decides to do it. So, but the reference is not clear.
Well, his will is totally independent. And he can act one way with one person, a different way with another person, and the same person multiple different ways. So how he decides what he decides, when he decides what he decides, you have to ask him. It's his own free will. And the main thing to always be clear about is his kindness, or we just, the reading this morning was compassion. It's very prominent. That's what's guiding the when and the how and the what and the where and the why and everything. He's very kind. And he's exhibiting his kindness in different ways that we can't understand because, you know, we're not him.
Giri Vattikota, Prabhu asks, can you please explain more on doing daily activities in the service mode? As duty versus loving service to the Lord.
Well, this is the standard 9 to 5, how do I be Krishna conscious question. And, you know, it's a long topic. But the topic starts with nicely performed sadhana. And if you don't, To say it positively, the more you nicely perform sadhana, the more likely you'll be remembering Krishna during the day. And negative is, if you don't perform nicely your sadhana, you're not likely to remember Krishna during the day. So then there's nice sadhana means to understand the body and the mind and the coverings of the soul, and they have a place in the holistic picture of service to Krishna. So it's not just your sadhana that's service to Krishna, and then the other things are, you know, in another bucket. It's not a secular ideology. Those things are meant for Krishna's service. So then you have to contemplate how the mind senses and your working activity, the ability that Krishna has given you is meant for him. Including, you know, your service to your family and et cetera, et cetera. That's service to Krishna. If we think of, we'll say it negatively, if we think of living entities as not really connected to Krishna, then we're not going to think of our work as connected to Krishna. But if we think of the souls, our family members and the people in the workplace and the marketplace and so forth, this, you know, the topic came up, I think it was yesterday, of Samadarshana, seeing all living entities equal, but seeing all living entities, they're living entities and they're parts of Krishna. So it's evolving of Krishna consciousness that starts with proper sadhana, and then taking the understandings that you hear from Bhagavad Gita, etc., and not just nodding your head saying, yes, I got an A in my exam in Bhakti Shastri, but how do you apply it in practical terms in your day-to-day life? So it's the application part that will help you perform your prescribed duties while you're always remembering Krishna, because Krishna's teachings will guide your activities if you do your sadhana nicely. And there's much more to say, but that's, I think, enough for this morning.
I have three more questions, Guru Maharaj. This is from Sanda Mataji. I need clarification in time management. Primary duties as household work and secondary duties are like a spiritual activities like our sadhana and reading and listening. Is that correct?
The question is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, that's what
you just flip like. It over and you've got it correct. Spiritual well-being leads and material well-being follows, not the other way around. Go ahead, next.
Atulya Mantari is asking, Maharaj, what is the level when one goes back to Godhead? When is it that one goes back to Godhead?
When you're Krishna conscious.
He said that one has to be at the level of gopis or no. What's the level they should be?
You don't have to be a gopi to go back to Godhead.
Okay. The Shiva's also telling level of gopis is very high. So.
Yeah, it is. We don't have to be a gopi.
And final question, Chandana Mataji from Nepal. Can we ask this question of the discrepancy between pure devotional service giving immediate relief from Klesha Agni, yet later, anybody sets the expectation that relief cannot be immediate. One has to suffer or enjoy their karma.
I think anybody in this room can answer that question. The relief of kleshas begins. Think about cleaning your kitchen after cooking. Is cleaning your kitchen after cooking something that just happens in half a second? Or does it take some time? And then clean, and there's more clean, and then it's, you know, spotlessly clean, finished. It takes some time. Like cleaning your kitchen, so also cleaning the heart, it takes some time. And as we clean our heart, the contaminations of the heart become diminished, and thus the sufferings, because suffering is due to ignorance, that the ignorance is diminished by your connection with Krishna, knowledge of Krishna. So it begins immediately, but it's not complete. And then this other idea that we're obliged to suffer the reactions of our misdeeds. The fact of the matter is, there's two facts. One fact is bhakti is so powerful that immediately your prarabdha karma is gone. Bhakti is so powerful that your prarabdha karma is gone. I said it twice. So when you or I experience some difficulty, it's not prarabdha karma. It's something else. It's Krishna's mercy or, a reminder of our past misdeeds to keep us sitting straight rather than getting, complacent. But it's not simply due to karma. And so the second part of that answer is, if a devotee speaks like that, it's coming from a place of humility. It's not I'm a devotee and so I have no karma. So, fie on you, material energy. I'm sticking my tongue out at you. Forget it, Buster. So that's not the mood of a devotee. The mood of a devotee is very humble. And I've done some, who knows how many misdeeds. And if something comes my way out of humility, I think this is coming my way because of my misdeeds. but it's not a 100% you're getting everything that you would have gotten if you hadn't become a devotee. That's not karma. Okay? Prabhupada ki?